Hello everybody, time for my last review of the year, which always a little bit bittersweet for me. Last one this year is Twelfth Night, directed by Sean McGrath. I saw it on August the 24th, and it was raining. And at first I was very happy because it's been, it nearly was, the first festival I'd ever been to where I was not in rain for any moment at all. Now admittedly, this has been my lowest attendance in many years at the festival, sadly. But I did see all the plays, and I saw four of them twice. And it was sunshine all the way until the last day. And I actually think that, you know, rain is part of the festival. So I started off fairly happy about it. I didn't stay happy about it all night, it probably has to be said. I'm just looking at what I posted at Facebook when I got home. This is it. I'm quoting myself here, but why the hell not? Just home from Twelfth Night, soaked to the bone. Originally, I was going to say I was drookit, but only a couple of people in the cast would get what I meant. So we'll go back to soaked to the bone. My jeans have congealed into layers off, and then I couldn't think of anything to say. They were so wet and became so heavy and cold that it was just teeth-chatteringly cold. I mentioned that I lived in Finland for two winters. Sometimes the temperature was minus 30, well, quite high 30s. One day I was out, it was minus 39. But of course you're prepared for it there and you're dressed properly. And so I rarely felt as cold as I did when I got home last night. Of course, it's my own fault for not taking all the right gear. I did actually have correct gear with me to sit in a seat. I had a black bin liner, etc. But the rain had stopped, more or less. The forecast was that it was not going to go ahead. So about 7 o'clock or so, I decided to move right to the front in the grass. And of course, once I was there, I didn't move, even though I landed up sitting in puddles and freezing half to death. But I did actually say last night, oh, happy day, because this is what the CSF is all about. Wimps leaving the audience and the hardcore staying, and the brave and brilliant cast slipping, sliding and skidding in high heels and smart shoes in the mud. Evening dresses and other unsuitable clothing worn by the cast showed the so-called hardcore in the audience, that I was clearly hoping to be one of, that we too are wimps compared to them. So then I said, you can keep your heat wave, this was the real deal. I think there was a little bit of hypocrisy in me as I was typing that, because I was actually shaking at the time. I did then add, I love you all, and you were great over and above the conditions, a stellar production. And that is all true. But just before we leave the weather, I should say, because most people in the audience, and you never know, one or two might listen to this, most people in the audience will not be aware how early the cast were actually out. At 20 past seven, and possibly before then, at 20 past seven, all of the cast were out in the rain underneath a tree, which was affording possibly some protection, trying to keep their spirits up as they got soaked, waiting on their cue to come out and start. And given the hassle that the weather was causing, I don't think we started until after half past, so it was quite some considerable time the cast were standing there getting soaked before they even started acting and getting soaked. So well done to everybody for keeping going, and also for stressing the word dry, which seemed to come up far more often in the play than I'd ever remembered it coming up. I remember Festy being called a dry fool, and then it is dry, and keep my hand dry, and at one point the word dry seemed to be going back and forward like a shuttlecock in a badminton game. Obviously, the actors were pausing and stressing it, or just the word was so resonant that I was noticing it more. I'm mainly going to talk about the cast in this, but I should say that we were once again in King's facing the pergola. It's interesting how quickly that's become the regular and the standard. You actually have to force yourself to remember that it used to be that we always faced the other way. Strange how things can change so quickly. I think it's much better facing it, apart from the fact that you occasionally get fantastic glimpses of the moon just at the right moment of a Shakespeare speech. Apart from that, and other things like the plants are so attractive, and there's many things to hide behind. Just clambering on it, so we'd Festy clambering on it this time. There's always somebody clambering on it. So George Eddy as Festy was up and down there. More on him later, more on everyone later. But being Twelfth Night, you really have to start with Viola, or Cesario, we should really say. One of the interesting things I've always thought about the play is that if you first go and see it in the theatre, so before reading it, if you first go and see it in the theatre, you don't actually know the name Viola until the very end, actually, because she's obviously called Cesario. If you read it, you know it's Viola right away. Anyway, played by, it says in the programme, Victoria Rowland. I believe she also goes by the name Vicky, so if it's okay, I'll use the name Vicky. And Vicky was absolutely outstanding. It's such a powerful character to play, and she did play Cesario Viola as a woman who really was ahead of the other characters in the play. So if you think of them as people, she was the strongest person. Her beauty in no way looked masculine, but that's not her fault. Her beauty obviously won Orsino's heart right away. Poor Frederick Arnott had no choice but to fall in love with her. And of course, that very lucky Orsino ends up with her at the end of the play, which is the one thing, one of the two things, because I'm always worried about Antonio and, well, three things. I'm worried about Antonio Malvolio at the end, and I'm also worried about the fact that the universe is so unjust that Orsino gets Viola because he just doesn't deserve her. That's not casting any aspersions at you, Frederick Arnott. That's casting aspersions at Mr. William Shakespeare, because I've never, ever been convinced that Orsino getting Viola is a happy ending. Maybe I'm just jealous. The interplay between the two was excellent. Again, it has to be. I wouldn't be saying it's a great production if that didn't work, and it did. They're coming close together and almost kissing and then breaking off. All of that stuff, which has been done very well in the past in other productions, again, was excellent. What I thought was more strongly done this time, though perhaps it's because I was right in the front row and there was nobody else stupid enough to be in the front row. In fact, the front row was me. Me and lots of puddles. Perhaps because I was so close and lucky enough to be right beside the cast as they were performing, was the use of eye contact. It was extraordinarily strong and very moving. Not just between Orsino and Viola, though it was spectacularly between them, but also, as you would expect from Olivia by L.J. Reeves, and, well, indeed everybody. The eye contact between the cast and the audience was fantastic. Having mentioned L.J. Reeves as Olivia, she, again, I mentioned, I think, the last time I was reviewing a part she played, her regal presence, and of course that helped very much because, despite everything else that's all going on, Olivia is a very good leading figure. She does run the household. This is what impresses Sebastian later on and convinces him that she can't be mad, because she does impressively run the whole thing. So she does have that gravitas and regal nature. As the lady of the house. Of course, she's also completely besotted, and she has to play that part as well, which was very well done. What I thought came out best in this portrayal of Olivia were some very tender moments. The terrible moment when Andrew Ogrecheek is berated and rejected by Orsino. She moved towards him and put her hand towards his back. It was very, very moving indeed. Her explanation of how much she was in love with Cesario was also very moving. So there were three or four moments of real touching emotion of great depth. Of course, the play is not just about touching emotion and great depth. It's about great fun as well, and much fun was had. We had the return of Rob Gall. He threatened to me that I wouldn't see him this summer, but I knew I would. You just have to have faith in these things. Anyway, Rob was reprising Toby Belch from 4 years ago, I think. Now, I had to actually look that up, and I'm hoping that actually I've made a mistake and I've looked it up incorrectly, because I can't believe that 4 years has passed already. But anyway, Rob Gall reprising his previous Toby Belch, where he had a wonderful chemistry with Tim Weston as Andrew Ogrecheek. This time he had a wonderful chemistry again, which of course is again necessary for this to work at all. Rolf Fox was an excellent Andrew Ogrecheek. Well, they're an excellent pair, really. I don't want to talk about them separately, because the way they bounced off each other with their boyish nonsense was very good indeed. And heartbreaking. So back to the emotion again, because when Toby does reject Andrew in the horrible and clear way and points out that he's a buffoon and it must become obvious even to Andrew that he's only been used for his money and all the camaraderie that we've seen is in fact a sham, it was very moving indeed and very well acted. We had more than one Scots actor on the stage, and Alexander Gordon Wood even got arrested by a fellow Scot, which I thoroughly enjoyed. Nothing personal, of course, it just was good fun. And so we had Charlotte Taylor playing Maria and playing the officer. Very, very strong Maria. all the main parts were very strong. So she was great and had some good, strong accent moments as well. And it's obviously a bonus to have somebody of Alexander Gordon Wood's stature playing a part like Antonio, a very good part. Antonio's always got a really hard time in Shakespeare. They always seem to be in love with another man and not get him, if you think of Merchant of Venice and this one. It's quite a sad part, really. And, of course, he's so badly treated by the Confusion, and he's so wonderfully loyal. He's as staunch a character as Kent and King Lear, really. And anyway, as you would expect, wonderfully brought off by Alexander Gordon Wood. I mentioned that George Eddy was festy. He had the steampunk glasses on from The Midsummer Night's Dream of a recent memory, which was nice to see. He played a quite a complex festy, very good, very strong, very my favourite bit, actually, jumping to my favourite bit and then missing all the other things that George did well. Sorry, George. My favourite bit was at the end when he attacks Malvolio. This is after everything's being revealed as to what happened. And he tells Malvolio why he did it. Now, this bit never really convinces me normally when I see it. I can't remember the last time I saw it and I was convinced, because Malvolio's plight is so extreme. And his punishment for, admittedly, his annoying self, but the punishment for what he does seems so out of proportion that it's very difficult to take any justification for it. But I was convinced. This time I was convinced that Festi was justified. The depth of annoyance in his voice for the way he had been scorned by Malvolio really made you feel that, hey, this guy was pretty evil to these other people. Okay, they've been really evil back to him, but he started it. And I think that's a very difficult thing to pull off, especially when Festi's doing all the other things that he does. So kudos to that one. Christopher Brooks was also extremely effective as Sebastian. Sebastian coming on, and he has no idea why the rich, beautiful woman wants to ravish him every opportunity she can. She can't take her hands off him or her eyes off him. She's desperate to get him into bed, and she's desperate to marry him and make her the master of the household and give him everything she has. And for some, peculiar reason, he doesn't really fight against this. He's pretty much willing to play along with it, though it does puzzle him greatly. Very big-hearted of him, I think, to accept all this. But a minute ago I was speaking about Malvolio, and I've left him to the end because I thought he was an absolutely tour de force by Adrian Palmer. He has a wonderful stage presence, a wonderful Malvolian stage presence, and tremendously humorous mannerisms that illustrated what he was saying very well and illustrated his character behind what he was saying very well. I can't really take the later treatment of Malvolio because it's just too bad to cope with. So I'm actually remembering him earlier on in his full pomp, his full puritanical pomp, if you want. He's wonderfully done up with his handlebar moustache and just really an excellent Malvolio. You could tell right away that the crowd loved him. Even through the rain you could feel the appreciation. I thought that was absolutely brilliant. But I am sure that the Cambridge Shakespeare Festival is good for me, and it's good for everyone. It's been a bumper year with extraordinary weather and so extraordinary attendances, and of course because of the quality of the plays. It's all been fantastic, but it's time to say goodbye for another year. So goodbye till 2019.